You're listening to a Countout Podcast.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters' 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
What's up, and welcome everyone to Faces and Feels.
Back again. I can't believe it. But if I was going to do it, it was for this man. I haven't spoken to him. We said what, June last year or some shit. I've probably recorded like three interviews since then. So with the pace that I've been going. But man, it is the loudball man that calls wrestling. The commentator with the most stones in wrestling.
Oh, man, I haven't used that in a hot minute.
That's it. See, it's still relevant to me because we only spoke about it a week ago.
That's true. That's true.
A year and a half. But what's up, my man? How you doing?
Good. Raph, it's so nice to see you and talk to you. And I know. I wanted to, like, you know, catch up. And you were like, hey, we can always talk on the podcast again. And I've had a very like, it's a good like introspective year for wrestling for myself, because like when we first talked, it was like June of 2024, and I was just starting to, you know, get my name out there more beyond the realms of like Deathmatch, beyond the realms of like Ruthless Pro Wrestling, and doing more commentating and whatnot. And I have had a huge year, just both personally and professionally. And what's a better way than to talk about with my favorite Australian fellow and a fantastic podcast. So that's what we're going to do. We're just going to talk about wrestling and tell stories and hopefully not bored everybody. So
that's amazing. I mean, you said you were like when we first spoke, and that was kind of crazy because we actually knew each other for years.
Yes.
Before we got around to doing an interview. And you were the reason way back in the day that I even met Chris Kohlenberg from Ruthless, because you reached out to me about getting him on the show and stuff like that. So we've been friends for years and years and years, and we talk all the time and send each other bullshit constantly. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it was funny that it took so long to actually have you be on the show. And then, yes, since then, obviously a lot has changed for you, working for way more companies, Ruthless's, park the bus for now. You've got a new name.
I'm going through a little bit of a brand change, if you will. So the story behind that, really. So I've started this like kind of takeaway, and my one buddy, Sean Porter, who does stuff for like NWA Exodus, and
I know him purely from that meme that you post every now and then. Sean Porter, are you today? I don't know Sean Porter. I've never heard his voice. I've never seen a show he's been on. I don't have him on Facebook, but whenever you post that, I always answer with which one I am.
Sean Porter, he'll get a big kick out of that. He'll get a huge kick
Absolutely. I think it's so funny. There's so many facial expressions there. It's very good. But I have no idea who the man is. I didn't even know he was in wrestling. Yes. I just thought he was your friend.
Oh, well, he's a friend because of wrestling, but he's also like a co-promoter for a company that I do with called Fantastic League of Wrestling, or FLO for short. But he also works with like NWA Exodus. So the NWA, because like in today's, now NWA is, they're kind of doing territories, and they have like these special NWA.
Okay. So that's like Billy Corgan's NWA.
Correct. Billy Corgan's NWA.
I have a quick story about that. I'm going to derail your story just to say I have seen the NWA, Billy Corgan's NWA, wrestle live one time only.
Okay.
And it was not in America. It was in a small country town in Ballarat.
All right.
So other side of the world, kind of pretty crimey, really. Middle of fucking nowhere, like away from Melbourne City, at a castle with jousting while the Smashing Pumpkins played.
That rules.
So NWA, we woke up at 5 a.m. and I swear I thought it was a dream. Like, my wife had to tell me later. It was like, she wakes me up and she's like, Smashing Pumpkins are coming to Ballarat with the NWA wrestling, and it's all happening at a castle with jousting. And I was like, are you buying a ticket? She's like, I've already bought two. And I was like, sick, and went back to sleep. And then I woke up and I was like, I had the craziest dream that we're going to go see wrestling and Smashing Pumpkins at a castle. She's like, it's not a dream. But I was like, fucking what? And it was amazing.
I bet it was.
And you know, there was like a knight in armor getting like ball shotted by a wrestler and stuff like that. It was so good, man. But yeah,
that rules. That rules.
It's still the most insane show I think I've ever been to. I could not believe that I was there.
Oh man. But yeah, Exodus is one of the and it's one of probably the most successful territory places, and it's right in Cleveland, Ohio.
Do you watch on YouTube, or how do they broadcast it?
Exodus is on YouTube. NWA's on the Roku channel.
Okay.
So if you have a Roku stick or you have the Roku app, I believe you can download and watch it. Don't quote me on that, but
is the Thrill Billy still on NWA? Silas, what's his name?
Yes, I believe. I believe he's the champion. Best.
Oh, well, fucking he should be, because he straight up, from the moment I saw his like first promo, I was like, this is the guy. I think he is like the most fascinating, fucking awesome wrestler in ages. Like, this just great throwback dude. And I can't say enough about him. And I was so stoked to see him live at the Cup.
Yeah, he's current NWA champion.
Yeah, there you go. Fuck, he is the dude, man. He's so good. I love him.
That's
what I want my wrestlers to be. I want mullets. I want like throwback wrestling. I don't care about anything else, really.
You want wrestlers.
I don't want wrestlers. I don't want wrestlers.
Yeah.
I don't care about hybrid wrestling. I don't care about technical prowess. I want like wrestlers cutting promos about don't talk to me, son, blah, 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 blah. Reference. I don't know.
You want somebody that can change the oil at your local auto shop, but then also slam a dude.
Yes, that's exactly what I want. Excellent. And I don't want I want him to just be like a big stocky hoss of a dude.
Yes.
You know what I mean? I don't need like some sculpted fucking Greek god. I need a dude that works at the auto shop and also happens to power slam people.
That's why I always like when I see Walter now on WWE television as Gunther, and like how he's
less intimidating now.
I agree. I liked it when it was Walter, where he was just like this big stocky motherfucker and just chopping the hell out of people. Like I can't get over Rift.
A lot of people probably look at him and are like, oh, this is like a fit, handsome dude or whatever. I'm like, he looks weird to me now.
Yeah.
Because he looked correct when I first saw him. And I mean, that was years ago now. But I still have that like others wrestle Walter Kills or whatever shirt where he's like slapping over the dude, you know, the black and white
one
that I'm
talking about. Yeah.
I still have that shirt and it's so sick. He came to Perth actually. On like a sick tour. What was it? I think it was like House of Hardcore or something, like Tommy Dreamer's thing.
House of Hardcore, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it was like him and Brody King and fucking, oh, no, no, wait. Maybe it was, I don't know. It's irrelevant what it was, but it was a sick lineup. Jonah Rock, like just all these huge hosses. And I like loved it. And yeah, I'm the same. I don't find him as intimidating now. Like I can't
do it. But yes, Sean Porter works for one of the NWA territories as a referee and as a promoter, and he's a good buddy and helps out with like a lot of. So there's like a handful of us that not only does like a lot of wrestling or there are promoters or like it's everybody who are not wrestlers. Mm-hmm. But it happens with all the production people. And also one of the big companies that I started working with was an all women's promotion called Divine Pro. So it's like all the performers and like the referees and like my commentary partner are all woman or femme front, femme based, people. And like all the dudes are like security, camera people, commentators, production, maybe an occasional ref. But Sean Porter is one of these groups of people that I met through that, because then after shows like that, we'll go over to my friend's basement and we'll play Magic the Gathering until like 4 a.m, which is like the proper way to do it. We're going to be in somebody's furnished basement playing card games from the 90s, like the proper nerds we are.
But, yeah, that's awesome. I like to imagine that every single one of those faces in the Witch Sean Porter you happened in the same Magic the Gathering game.
You're not wrong. You're not wrong.
It was all in the same day.
Some of them it's like the same day. Some of them it's like with our because he's just such a cast. He's just a character. He just really is. And now he's like dabbling.
Expressive face.
Oh yeah. So we just built, like we started doing that meme and then like it grew to the point that I have 12 different faces. No, I think 16. I doubled it. I have 16 faces and it's just him in like the wackiness of his life. And it's just incredible. But like,
You're gonna have to send me that so I can share it on the Instagram so people know what we're talking about.
Oh, he'll get a pop out of it. I will send it now while we're still talking. But
I'll wait till the episode posts so it makes sense to anybody.
Exactly. But you know, I've been bouncing around and I've been doing more. I've been more traveling now than I've ever done for wrestling, and like, you know, RPW had the opportunity to go to a lot more states this year, beyond just our, you know, tri-state area that we run out of. Michigan, you know, we've been starting to do stuff at Berwyn Eagles, which is in Chicago, Illinois, which is from where we're at is about 4 to 5 hours drive there. But we had the opportunity this year to go. We went down to Texas. We've done stuff in Wisconsin. We've done stuff in Florida, 2 shows in Florida. He went, Chris from RPW, helped with the show in California, literally the other side of the country. I couldn't go for that. I couldn't go for that one, unfortunately, because also a lot of the stuff was just like, you know, live to tape, or I would have to do stuff in post-production and everything. But the stuff that I could go to, I did. Like, I traveled down to Texas, which was a very interesting experience. It was interesting in the sake of not necessarily just the show, but we ran into problems with my wife and flying. So in the state of Ohio, just a quick story that when you have to renew your license at a certain point in time. And then they give you like a little bit of a piece of paper in the temporary for your license. Okay. And we asked, hey, we're, you know, and you have to do that around your birthday. So we asked, they're like, hey, we're about to be traveling this weekend. We're not going to get the new license back in time. Is this okay to fly? So they were like, yeah, it's okay to fly. Well, come to find out it was not okay to fly. I had to fly out, and then she had to get like a secondary flight Like they got put her on a new flight, but then she had to like do a layover in California and then go back into Texas.
They needed like more time to verify all her credentials.
Correct. That's
now. Whereas like you guys were just rocking up to get on the flight, and they're like, "We need way more time," and your flight's like leaving, so you
correct.
Have to go,
kind of. Yeah. That was exactly, and that was like the worst like situation.
You hate leaving her, right? That's horrible.
But like she came back and we did the show, and she like, you know, because she's not the biggest wrestling fan, and God bless her for it, even entertaining all the stuff that I've been doing this year. And she'll come along and then she'll just like explore the city we're in or the area we're in. And then when I'm ready to come back, or I'm like, hey, meet us at the Airbnb, or hey, I'm ready if you want to pick us up and, you know, we can all travel back to where we're staying.
Hey, we're all going to play Magic the Gathering, meet us at this basement, that kind of
thing. Something like that. But after the show in Texas, we ran into more problems with her getting back, because they were like, hey, you know, you were under investigation of being not an actual person. You didn't have your proper paperwork to fly. So my wife
it obviously got sorted out because I flew here.
Correct.
I fucking got here.
Correct. Right, yeah. So we ended up going, like, we ended up like getting our tickets refreshed and like turned in, and we rented a car and we literally drove halfway up back, basically a 2-day trip with a couple of stops along the way. Like we ended up going
to, so you refunded your flights. You went, fuck it, we're just going to drive.
Correct. Okay. That's exactly what we did. What?
Did they refund you?
I don't know, to be honest, because like it was super weird, but like it was not to go into detail, but like tickets were bought in different ways. I don't know for sure if it got renewed or not. And we like passed the window about for everything, but it was whatever. But we took a 2-day trip with like, we stopped at Graceland. We had like proper Cajun food in Louisiana. We went to Graceland and we went also to Sun Studios, the place, like Johnny Cash and Elvis all recorded their stuff. So we went there. We got like proper Nashville hot chicken in Nashville, Tennessee. We stopped at a Buc-ee's cause it's like a wrestling landmark. So, but like it took another 2-day trip back up, but what like, it was like, and this was in January, by mind you. So we kicked off the year with something like this. And then like all the other wrestling that has been happening, like, you know, I got to go to Wisconsin a couple of times with RPW and then another company, We Love Wrestling. Not only that, for a collab show, but also later in the year, we went up there in like the summer in Wisconsin, and enjoyed ourselves for a We Love Wrestling show, because they're like, hey, we love you. If you can make it up, here, if you want to do a show live in person, instead of doing the post-production, you can go ahead and do that if you can. I'm like, I can swing it. We can swing it. I joined up with more companies. I spoke about like Divine Pro with all women's promotion. I do a show, a company up in it's about 3 hours north of me, called Super Shogun, which is a fantastic promotion that is kind of like Americanized King's Road style of wrestling, but like they have their own venue and like the production and the vibes are absolutely incredible. And then like they have really good, like different talent, because like Michigan in the United States is like an oversaturated state of pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of wrestling companies in Michigan, but the problem with that is a lot of the companies run almost the same time. So like you're splitting the audience, and then B, a lot of those companies use the same handful of people. So like 1 week you'll see this match, and then all of a sudden like 2 weeks later you're seeing the same set of people about that. Well, this place in Shogun is far enough away from that area of Michigan that it's its own talent. It's very unique. It's very fun. And I got to join up with them in the summer because they were looking for another commentator, and they're about to be on the precipice of like doing more live shows, like live streaming. They're working stuff out with like, you know, not necessarily streaming networks, but like stuff like, you know, YouTube or Twitch streaming and whatnot, which is super cool, which is a huge step for an independent company to get to that point to doing that. You know, I started doing more another company called Neo Pro Wrestling, which is around where my hometown is, about 3 hours southeast of me. In Ohio, which has been around for 3 years, and they were looking for, you know, an actual proper commentary team. And, you know, I threw up my name in the hat and they liked what I did. So I got that. And I also got to start doing stuff in like my first quote unquote international, work, which is, I was doing stuff in Canada, which where I live, Canada is like 2 hours away, if that.
Yeah, okay.
It's not
closer than some of the other shows.
Correct. Well, I mean, a lot of the places I'm going in Canada is still like I can reach the border within like an hour and a half to Canada. But like it's still then another 3 hours, you know, in the province of where I'm going to. Mostly a lot of my stuff has been in Ontario so far. And I started doing a show called Norfolk County Championship Wrestling, and it's kind of like, you know, they started doing a little bit of stuff with NWA Exodus and everything, kind of like some of the crossover of the talent, and coming up in the new year, they're going to be having some more of those mainstays from Exodus going into there, which is super cool. And then I had my first opportunity this year as well to do English commentary for a non-English speaking promotion. Yes. And that's with Puzzle out of Taiwan, which is just such a wild like idea that myself and John Bullard, who's been on the show before, Bullard has all these connections with all these places. And we had the opportunity, they were looking for English commentary. Mind you, they don't have a commentary team normally in Puzzle, which is so
they don't have a Taiwanese commentary team.
No,
they only have an English team.
They do, and Taiwan has like Taiwan speaks like Japanese, Chinese, English as well. English is like a major language, so like they understand a lot of the Taiwanese people know English, but
yeah.
It's, you know, it's really cool that like we are the voices of the only promotion in Taiwan, mind you. And it's really cool. And what they're doing is just so incredible. I tell people like for a company that's only been around for a few years, they have really like carved a niche out of themselves. And now they're starting to get a little bit more coverage because a lot of their talents now have been starting to do excursions into like Japan and some of the indies there. So like they're doing stuff in like Big Japan or Freedoms or things or some of the other like independents in Japan. But then also at one point, one of the characters or one of the wrestlers came over to the United States with Dale Patrick's actually. His name's Marihana. And he got to have an excursion for like a month or so in the United States. He did stuff with RPW. He did stuff with We Love Wrestling. He did stuff with us at Fantastic League of Wrestling, which was super cool. And then he went back to Taiwan. And like people like were amazed by that. And now hopefully in the new year, me and John keep talking about it. Like we want to try to get more of those Puzzle folks over to the States. And or get more exposure with people to understand, that country and what they're doing and their talent, because their talent pool is really cool. They just did a show. And like before we did the interview, I was editing the footage and recordings that myself and John just did when they did a show with Freedoms.
Yeah, cool.
They
did a crossover show. Right?
They did a crossover show. They did a couple. They had the Puzzle people go over into Freedoms to do a show, and then the Freedoms people came over to Taiwan at their home location and did a show. And it actually, slight spoiler alert, they won. Sasaki and Jun Kasai won the Puzzle tag titles. So they got to taking them back into Japan. So they're like, and Puzzle has like two titles right now, the tag titles, and they call it the top of Puzzle title. So it's really cool, and like the footage can be seen like on YouTube, but it's behind a paywall. For the full shows and also the full English shows, but they've been starting to like pepper in for free a match or two from certain shows that are in full English, which is super cool. So we can tell people about it, and then if they want to, throw down like $8 American for it. It's been really cool, but just like I've been working very hard on like all of the commentary and learning so much, and had opportunities recently talking with like folks from like TNA, from like the NWA, people like actively like looking and like commentating myself, like people that have been in the business for like two decades and learning more about the commentary style, because you know I did pretty well in deathmatch, but that's deathmatch. Where, let's be honest, deathmatch is not known for their high quality commentary style.
No, they're not historically. It's also an easier style to call because there's usually like a lot happening, you know, that you can talk about, and they're usually pretty laid back shows and stuff as well. So we can have a bit of a joke or a swear or a carry on or whatever. I'm trying to think, have I ever commentated a real match before? Like, I've definitely commentated non-death matches, but there's right. No ring. And then, maybe a Bleeding Gums couple of matches that were like, you know, I used to joke. I'm like, I didn't know like what things were called and stuff because I'd never called with a ring. I'm like, what's this thing he's climbing up here? Like, because I'd never seen it before because I'd only commentated no ring stuff.
Right.
But I guess you'd say that I've only ever done commentary for like alternative deathmatch and no ring kind of.
Right.
Companies,
and like for the record, it's
completely different thing.
Yeah, and for the record, there's nothing wrong with that. I'm not dogging it or anything. But
I'm just saying, like watching those matches and stuff, it's a completely different thing because a bit more thought needs to go into the story that the people are telling in the match opposed to the hardware that's being used. You know,
that's the hardest thing. For a lot of that is the through story, and that's the thing that I've been working on a lot with is understanding the through story of like, okay, you have this story and you have the idea, but like what's the general through story, and then how do you lead people into the next one?
Get easier. I was going to say it's hard when you go into a place and maybe even they're just sort of dream match scenarios where they're not really so much telling stories and stuff. But then once you are kind of settled in and there is maybe a company that is telling longer form things, then that would become easier because you've got a lot to mine from, right?
Yes and no. I can give you two examples of both. So the one of like the kind of the dream match scenario, I called in one of the shows recently, I called a match between Dijak and Steve Macklin. And Steve Macklin at the time had the TNA, well, he still does at the time of this recording, he still has the TNA International title. So he defended the TNA International title against a man, Dijak, who is currently signed with MLW.
Yeah.
So... like we told the story about what happens if an MLW guy wins a TNA title. What does this also mean? And that was the idea of like when I had that match recently critique, they were like, that's a good story, but you forgot the story about how Macklin was working over Dijak's leg the entire match. And you somewhat mentioned it, but you didn't tell like the through story of that.
Yeah.
So like that was something that I'm learning more about, is like the through story. And then like the opportunity is something like Super Shogun, for example. I jumped in a show before their biggest show of the year. So I had to like do my research. And luckily, like all the stuff was like readily available of like the characters and the people and like the storylines leading up to like their massive show of the year, like called Samurai Slam, which is their like their WrestleMania show. So like it was the biggest thing of just like understanding all of that leading into that. And I made sure I do my research. I always try to do my research in general, no matter where I'm at, where, you know, I do my own research and then I go up the day of and like ask everybody, you know, what's the story? What do you want us to pop for? Things like that. I just do my due diligence. And like, I do that no matter where I'm at, whether it's like alternative formats or not, because I always personally treat commentary like, you know, reading a comic book, because like, depending on where you are, you're jumped into the middle of the story. Yes, there is a story in this comic book, but then there's a greater overarching story that's going on. So I want to make it as easy as someone can when they first watch a show or they first pick up the comic book. What's going on? Why are these things important? And then reference back certain things that people hopefully will go back and rewatch or watch back catalog or understand the bigger overarching story.
Yeah. Do you find that, I'm wondering if it's an American thing or Australian thing. Do you find when you talk to the wrestlers, I mean, wrestling's a bit more prevalent and people are able to essentially be full-time wrestlers in the States. So they would have a little bit more of like an ongoing arc in their character's kind of storyline, because mostly in Australia, I kind of get a bit like, oh yeah, whatever, just call it out there. Like, you know, they don't really know. Like, I mean, they have a story that they're going to tell, but because, you know, it's a kind of spot show type thing, it's just like, it is what it is. And I do my best to invent stuff and, you know, and tell things because I love doing that. I love telling long form stories. But yeah, do you get like prior to shows, you have a conversation? Well, actually, what we've been doing is this. And he's like, you know what I mean? They're really engaged and they are all about what's happening.
I have both. I'm not afraid to tell this story, but I remember clearly when the one time before he started doing more stuff with GCW, Atticus Koger really like sitting me down and kind of telling me like what the story is going on and, you know,
that's so cool to me. That he's that like engaged. I think it's also Australians are pretty laid back a lot anyway.
Right.
Without any offense meant, Americans like as a rule are pretty main character based in their lives. I think due to reality shows and things like that. You
not
know
wrong.
What I mean?
That's
not a criticism, but their feelings matter and they've got points of view and they want it to be heard and people, you know, that is like the way of your culture. Australians are kind of like, nobody really gives a fuck what I think, so who cares?
Yes.
And like, we're like very like, who do I think I am? You know, because we have a real tall poppy syndrome in our country. If you know that saying, poppies grow high, you cut them down and bring them down, right? So if somebody is like getting too popular or whatever, everyone in town's like, oh, fuck this dude, man. Like, you know, everybody turns on him, you know. You grow up in high school and if you step out of line and maybe do something a little bit creative or look a bit different, everywhere, they're like, what's this fucking gay dude fucking doing? You know, like, of the time growing up in the 90s, this is – so it gives you a bit of a complex where you're like, I want to do well, but not too well. You know,
it's that
in America, everybody wants to shine, right? Like, it's the land of the free, the home of the fucking, you know what I mean?
Well, yes,
like,
and no, because, you know, there are some people like Atticus who have sat me down and kind of spell things out.
It shows, though.
It does show.
And in everything, and it's why he stands out.
Correct.
Everybody else, because he has a vision, right? Like, and it is very clear that he knows what he's doing. And that lines up. Anywhere you see him, he's that. And it's like, zoom.
Correct.
Whereas some other wrestlers, like, they'll just fill slots, you know, like whatever needs to be done.
And that could be great and it could not be great, because like I tend to gravitate towards the more of the people that are understanding, and because I've gotten wrestlers that go, hey, what do you want me to pop for? You know what you're doing. You know the background. That's fine. I'm going to be doing this. And you know, because like a lot of the people like depends on like, yes, their brand, but also it's more of like the promoter's point of view, because some people treat it as like it's independent wrestling. So either none of it matters or all of it matters. And is it everything connected, or is everything separate? And that's how I kind of view it as well, because like I'm a firm believer of optics, and this is my marketing brain coming at you, and you know, like being in like doing corporate radio and like knowing branding and marketing and things like that. This is my marketing mind, how it works, because like you want to bring out the ideas of like you're going to your show, they're seeing these people, and you need to make sure it's still branded, even though they are all around and doing other places, and they're you know, they're doing the road trips, they're, you know, they're showing up at different, you know, they'll run three companies sometimes in the same weekend, you know, and everybody has a different vision and everything, but they still need to bring it out and make sure we all understand this is what this promotion does, and this is why this is important, and this is why, you know, you need to express this. You know, I do talk about like other promotions while I'm at, so if I'm at promotion A, I will mention that if they showed up in promotion B or C, if it made sense to them, because we can speak about. Great example. We had Alice Crowley this year, who was Divine Pro champion. And she is one of those people that have been getting more and more her name out there in places like Juggalo Championship Wrestling. You know, she's always been like a very impactful competitor. So we can mention that like she's been going to these places and everything, because it makes a lot more sense for her character in that moment, even though she is representing our company at the moment. You know, we could still talk about her. So
is there a bit of that where sometimes promoters are like, don't fucking talk about it. We're the only fucking fan in the world, man. Don't mention anybody.
They won't go that far. But yeah. most companies are pretty cool of like mentioning it. But like me, myself, if I'm this is the good thing about being a commentator, because us commentators, and you can attest by this, we have one foot in the back and we have one foot as a fan, because we can get the first line reaction of like what all the fans are paying attention to and popping for and expressing themselves. And then because of our connection, we can go to the back and we can talk to the talent, the promoters and whatnot. And we're going, hey, we're noticing this. We are noticing some of these things. And some promoters will take that with, you know, very interesting set of eyes and everything. And some people are like, you know, and I'm not saying that like the places I work for or anything, you know, are doing something like that. But I know of other promotions that are like, we know better. We know what we're shooting for, things of that nature. And you know, I was a big purveyor of being like a wrestling fan or like a wrestling expert, quote unquote, and throwing out all these ideas and everything. And then I heard a phrase recently of saying not to be too wrestling. And I had to get an explanation about why I need to be not too wrestling. And it goes, it's more than just knowing the holds. It's more than just that you need to help tell the tale and like guide the viewer of the reasonings of things. You need to explain more to the viewer. Why is there a 10 count on the floor for wrestling? Why, if you're in a submission hold, they grow up the ropes, why does that force the rope break? Why is this submission hold, or why is this pinfall important, or like why is this position, you know, important, or why is this, you know, tweak on this body part important? Things of that nature. And you need to not be so expertive, but also at the same time, you still want to like create the idea of like the characters and the help suspension of disbelief.
And talking through the damage and the angles and the things like that, like what it's going through and relating that to your own experience and things like that. Like, oh, I've stepped on a Lego before. That was the worst thing that
ever. Right.
Kind of, you know, those sort of dumb things, or like, you know, somebody picks somebody up and I'm like, I can't believe I picked him up. If I can't even pick up my thing over there or whatever it
exactly.
may be.
And
like,
yeah.
like when they wrestle on the concrete floor, dude, like they do a kip up off the floor or whatever. I'm like, I can't believe he did that. I couldn't even sit down on that floor without like blowing out my back, you know?
Oh,
like,
yeah.
These kind of things, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you try and do. But in a non-deathmatch scenario, there's just way more of that because you've got to take into account all the rules and like the mechanisms of the ring and way more moves.
You know? Way more moves. And I've been starting to watch like more of like, you know, like New Japan with like Walker Stewart and like AEW with Excalibur and like knowing the actual move names more and like listening in. TNA does a very good job as well with like covering it with their team of Tom Hannifin and the former Aiden English. I think it's like Matt Rainwalt. I don't believe that's his last name. I think it's something like that. I might be a butchering, and if I did, I apologize. But you know, stuff like that, and really like also working on like the breathing, which is a big thing, which I never like would put into account for that, and that makes a lot more sense. You know, I was told. I'm exploring that a little bit more. I recently had somebody review my commentary stuff that they have been in the wrestling business much longer than I have, and they emailed me. You know, I reached out to them and was inquiring about any kind of coaching they did, and they don't offer it, but they saw my reel and then they gave me feedback for free, which was great, which was really cool. And they said, you know, work on your breathing techniques and everything, and, you know, not making too many words or in the same sentence and everything. And I was curious about that. And then they sent me more of the warm-ups and like an opera singer, like breathing technique. Yeah. Like it was like a 5-minute thing. And I was just like, I need to explore that more. So that's something that I also want to do.
Some as well.
Yeah, I like just saw that.
Yeah, that my singer from my band, who's a phenomenal vocalist and has grown in his abilities continuously. I had found that when doing ring announcing and stuff, like the first time I blew out my voice pretty quickly, and I've tried to be a little bit smarter about it, and I've been doing the exercises when I remember to do it. I'm not nearly as diligent as I should be, and they make a difference. I run through them on the way to the show and stuff like that, and I haven't blown anything out, you know, in the meantime, but you might find some benefit in that.
That's something I want to do, and also like trying to keep my energy up. I remember right at the first King of the Kill, and that was like right before I was in the hospital for a week with, you know, gallstones, and, you know, hence the most stones of wrestling. That I need to keep my energy up, so I always have like a ghost or something before the show to kind of keep the energy up, because, you know, my old ass, when I'm turned 40 next month, you know, I'm ready for bed after 9 o'clock. So
you need to shut up about your age.
we're old men, man.
It's all valid. And it's things that you don't really think of. You're like, oh yeah, I'm just going to sit there and talk about it. But like keeping your energy up is a real thing, because I've been in the middle of matches and it got a hold on, and it's been a long day. So where I can feel the flatness taking over me, you know what I mean? Like I can feel like I'm sort of at the end of my rope, you know, and you've got to dig deep and find that. So you're having sugar handy and things like that is very valid. I had a ghost for the first time recently, actually.
Yeah, how do you like it?
And I know, yeah, I had like a great one. It was pretty good.
Yeah.
And we were driving a hire car and I accidentally spilt some into the gearbox.
No.
Yeah, it just made the car faster. It was amazing. I did do that, though. I did spill it in the gearbox. I was like, hopefully that's okay. I just wiped the top of it. I'm like, it'll be a bit sticky within and the car will smell nice. But yeah,
Ghost is like the only caffeinated, because I like coffee personally, but like Ghost is the only energy drink that doesn't make me jittery. Like it just makes me like alert.
No effect. WWE whatsoever. I like White Monster. But if I don't know, sometimes it can have no effect on me and I could go to sleep immediately. And then other times it's like too much and I'm like, I've gone too far.
I definitely will sometimes, if I've had too many energy drinks, I will tell on the next morning when I see my Apple Watch and it just goes, your heart rate was a lot bigger than normal. I'm like, well, dude.
Yeah. I probably overdid it. But yeah, I very rarely have them. I keep them as a, like, in case of emergency, break glass kind of situation. Since we last spoke,
yes.
I've done a bit more commentary and things like that too.
I know you did stuff with ICW, didn't you?
Yeah. So I've called ICW No Holds Barred a bunch of times, which was really cool on their Australian shows, mm-hmm. Calling like matches with the Psychopath Boy and things like that were so cool. Sakuda. And then like stuff for Deathmatch Down Under as well. I've been lucky enough to do that. I called the Deathmatch Down Under Tag Team tournament, like the Dream Tag Team tournament.
Yeah, I saw that, yeah.
It's Deathmatch tournament in the bag. I really enjoyed it. I couldn't make it over for the two-day singles Dream though, and I was gutted about it because I really wanted to go and I would have been able to do commentary for that.
Oh.
That would have been so cool. I love calling with Ryan at Deathmatch.
Hey, what's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays, decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa, got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments, Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels, Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
This isn't just a game. It's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to HarlemGlobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.
Hey, hockey fans! Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at USAHockeyNTDP.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
And under, and Joel has kind of said, look, you know, anytime you're over, love to have you. At this stage, I mean, nothing's really wrestling until it happens and we'll see how the dates go and stuff. But if everything goes to plan, I'll hopefully be doing commentary on the 5th anniversary shows next year, which are shaping up pretty great. Like to call Takeda would be very fucking cool.
When are you going to come to America?
Never.
Well, you know what? Right now, don't. But
no, I currently have no interest whatsoever.
Honestly, I don't blame you as being from here. I don't want to.
but I will be seeing all my American friends again in Japan. So I got to catch them all, well, this year, in Japan, got to meet Struggles and Jack Solomon face to face, which was amazing to see those guys in real life. Struggles was probably my first friend in like wrestling podcasting.
I would love to have another chance to do a show with Struggles because the one. I did the one with him in Jersey the first time we ever went to New Jersey, and it was like a last minute like. It was like a weekend. Like they had a show on Friday, they had a show on Saturday, and then it was RPW on Sunday. Like we were at the H2O Arena, and they did Friday, and then they did the Hart Ballroom in Jersey on Saturday, and like we went there just as help support at the time when we were working with them, and he's like. Mm-hmm. It was like me and Stoney Schiavone were still the tag, the commentary team. So this was like me before Stoney left RPW and like I was the main guy. I would love to get another crack now at working with Struggles because now I'm a whole different person.
Yeah, yeah. I would love a chance to call together, and I know Struggles would be down for it if we had the opportunity to. It would be a heap of fun. Same with Jack. Same mm-hmm. with both, really. It would be so much fun. I kind of mini sort of commentated with them, I guess, because in Japan, like, it's all Japanese fans, and then I'm, like, the one loud English-speaking guy in the commentary. So you can definitely hear me on those shows. And also, there's a few times where, like, Jack will just talk to me, like, while things are
just
happening.
Just while you're happening. Like, hey, what are you doing?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah. He's like, what's up? And I came into that first show just simply so wasted. And so just like, have you cooked right now? And I was like, yeah, boy. And then fucking then Joel's music hit. And I'm like, what's up? And then I was like gone, like just absolutely blazing. And they were like, you were fucking
on. We heard Goana, and then I just went off.
I went off. Yeah. Joel Bateman was quite enough. He's like, you got me over in Japan, I swear to God, because you were just going nuts every time like it came out. But that was really great. I got to meet Jun Kasai, which was so cool.
I got to call a Jun Kasai match with the Freedoms puzzle cool. show, which was that's a nice, so cool. you know, little feather in my cap. You know, one of the biggest deathmatch wrestlers in the damn world.
He's the greatest. Like, him and Takeda side by side. But like, when I met Jun Kasai, I was not chill at all. Like, I was not cool. I don't really star boy out, you know, fanboy kind of thing. But I was pretty wasted, and I had gone outside with something, and he was like waiting for an Uber or whatever, and I was like,
"Oh God, no!"
I was, Kasai-san! Like, I was fucking so excited. Like, I was like, "Can we get a photo?" He's like, "Yeah," and I was like, "I'm wearing the hat. I got the shirt. I fucking like."
I'll send you the photo. You just marked out
I
so hard.
Marked out like crazy
as you should.
But like, I never do that. The only time I've really ever, I think, been starstruck in my life was like peak Kenny Omega in Japan. I think I've told this story on the podcast before. But we were at Howling Mask, and it was like just after Wrestle Kingdom, man. And he walked in, and Tiger from Howling was like, "Hey, behind you!" And I turned around, and I kind of saw Amy's face and my face and stuff. And I was like, "What's going on?" And then I looked, and Kenny had just walked in, and I swear it was like a grenade went off, like in the movies, you know, when all the sound goes, and you just hear like, and you can't really like, it was like, and I was like, "Fuck that." Is the best wrestler in the entire world.
Yeah.
Like, that's my fucking dude. Like, I was so excited to see him. But I no-sold it. Like, I was like, "Oh, hey, Kenny, what's going on?" He's like, "Hey." And we had a real pleasant conversation. Didn't even ask for a photo. Just had a chat about what's been going on, because he had just been, like, you know, top wrestler in the, you know, the Tokyo sports thing or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, congratulations on that." He's like, "Yeah." He's like, "I worked really hard for it this year." He's like, "It's taken a few years of my career, but, you know, it's worthwhile." We had like a really great conversation, and I was really proud of myself for not losing. And my friend James was with us, and he was like, "I don't know who that guy is. He's not a wrestling fan." He was just like with us doing something else. He goes, "But I could tell it was a big fucking deal, because it's like the look on every single one of your faces." He's like, "You handled it the best. The other two didn't even say anything. They were just like,
jaw to the floor."
Yeah, not a word spoken, as I just like proceeded to have this like great conversation to him. But then it all paid off. It all came full circle when they came to Perth, and we had like a pro ticket where there was sort of a meet and greet type walk around, get a signature photo type thing, and you can do that. And Kenny had a booth to himself, and he was sort of last in the thing, but he saw us there and he waved us over. And he was like, "Hey, you were the guys at the thing or whatever." And we're like, "Yeah." He's like, "Let's get a photo and stuff." And like, they were doing like, you know, pay for photos and stuff. He's like, "Oh, don't worry about that. I know them," kind of thing. And like, did photos with us and stuff, like didn't charge us, like just wanted to have a chat and things like that. And I was like, "That's a class act." We didn't sort of encroach on his personal time when he was doing stuff. And he like appreciated that. So
yeah, I think that's really I would love, like, that's a big goal for me this year, is to travel internationally. I have my passport. Yeah. I want it really bad.
Come to Japan in March when we're all there.
Fuck. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if I need to give any kind of favors to whether it's monetarily or sexually. But I if I had the opportunity to go to Japan,
whose dick does Peapod need to suck?
I wasn't gonna say it, Raph. I wasn't gonna say it outright. But here we go. Let's just throw it out there. God damn it.
Yeah,
whose dick do I gotta suck to go to Japan? Quote unquote.
Audio isolated, like Japan part cut
and
off.
They're like, and really, people would be like, you know what? Yeah, I get it. Yeah, I will say, like, my biggest, the biggest show I have called this year to date was the CZW Tournament of Death.
Yeah, that's sick. That's
which so was just, it felt like a fever dream. Let me tell you. Yeah. So when I first started, like, knowing about independent wrestling, like, there's always the moment that, like, people remember, like, the first time they got into wrestling, the first time they've gone to, like, a wrestling show. And I feel like if you are this into wrestling, you figure out the first time that you saw a non-WWF, WWE show.
Yeah.
Like, that I feel like is also up there. Is when you learned about the entire world of wrestling. And when I mean entire world.
If you would tell me what yours was. Because it is. It's like, and I've spoken about this before, it's like waking up from the Matrix, right?
Yeah.
You get unplugged. And sometimes, I've said this before, I'm like, sometimes I just want to get plugged back in. Like, I feel like I can't, I used to maybe enjoy it more before I knew, you know?
So, like, yes.
Plug me back in.
Yes, like, and no.
Yeah.
But I'll get to that in a moment. But the idea of, like, when I learned, like, so my first taste of, like, the independent wrestling world was Cleveland All-Pro Wrestling, which was a independent company out of Cleveland, Ohio, that had guys like Gregory Iron, M-Dog 20, Matt Cross, Josh Prohibition, when Ricky Shane Page was in a mask and called himself Christian Faith with his tag partner Vincent Nothing. A lot of those guys came from that promotion.
Yes.
That was like my first taste. My first proper taste was watching a Ring of Honor DVD. And I got into Ring of Honor during the Ring of Honor CZW feud. That time is when I jumped in. So, like, that's when I got unplugged from the Matrix in a sense.
Yeah, sure.
And learning about that, it was like then, you know, so like CZW was like one of the big companies when I was learning more about, like, independent wrestling and, like, the world of wrestling, Mexican wrestling, UK, Japan, whatnot. Ring of Honor, CZW, Pro Wrestling Guerrilla, and Chikara were, like, the big ones for me. In Japan, I used to do a little bit of, like, this was, like, towards the tail end of tape training and, like, the beginning of, like, wrestling forums and everything. So I would, like, get hip to, like, Dragon Gate back in the day with when Shima was still doing stuff, and like it was, you know, you rarely saw Ultimo Dragon, even though Ultimo Dragon started the company. You know, I knew a little bit of like some of the Japanese indies. I knew of New Japan, I knew of Stardom, but I couldn't, it was not a way for me to watch it and everything. But like those were the companies that like I really started going in. So like the idea of just like, I had the opportunity because of my work ethic and because of a lot of it's who you know in wrestling, obviously, to have the opportunity to speak with DJ Hyde and get on a CZW show and calling Tournament of Death in the middle of his family's farmland in Delaware at 700 people. It was intoxicating.
Yeah.
It was insane to call the action that I got to in the rain when it was thunder and lightning and like it kept blowing out the live feed, but like we worked through it, and like the ending scene of just like the pools of blood with like the rain puddles that like gathered into the, like it was insane, like video did not do it justice. It really did. It was like one of those wild. And here's the ridiculous thing. The next weekend after that, I did a show with maybe 100 people, if that, and at a venue that, and like for some reason that day, everybody was exhausted and no, there was no cheering or nothing. It was an emotional whiplash going from Tournament of Death to a random independent show that I got booked on. Like, it was rough. Like, I don't want to say what the company was just because I don't want to bury them or anything like that. And but like, it was just
it's added wear and tear on your body, because like doing a show like that is like going to an all day music festival.
Yeah,
exactly. So like then to just be like, oh, and I'm going to turn up here the next day. Like you're probably burnt out at that point. You'd probably have nothing left to give.
I sometimes like get the post-show depression occasionally. Mm-hmm. And luckily, like, I've done it enough. I do it enough that, like, the post-show depression is not as bad, because, like, I'm not doing just one company. I'm doing literally a dozen companies. So if it's not something I'm doing in person, it's something that I'm doing in my home studio. It's something, or I'm working on a show, or I'm working on an event, or I'm doing graphics for an event because I'm starting to, like, know how to edit shows, or and like I'm starting to, you know, try my hand on some design work with some wrestling companies and everything. Like all the stuff for Omega right now, for RPW, that's me. I'm creating all that. Which is a huge opportunity, because I threw out there to Chris, I was like, this is the final show. I really want to do these graphics. So he goes, well, you had in mind, I have a specific style. So I made like the announcement poster off of just a random Japanese movie that somebody posted about. And I just really liked how the poster laid out. So I mirrored that for the announcement poster for Omega. And they all loved it. And I reached out to a photographer. I was like, hey, do you mind? I will pay you. Can I get access to some of your photos? Because like the photos you used were really cool, and I want to give you proper credit. And he's like, yeah. And then he was willing to, like, we cut a deal and everything. And like, I use those photos, and then like all the graphics that I'm using are like, I have the person, and then in the background is like, it's very faint, but you'll see it. It's from a different RPW event they were a part of.
I just thought
that was very unique of just doing something like that. So we're rolling out the announcements right now, because the show's not until March. So we're like, doing the talent and everything. And I've been having an enjoyable time creating those.
They look tidy.
Thank you. I'm working very hard, and I'm like, I'm taking a lot of like reference with like, a lot of people that like a lot of graphics and people that I like and respect, and go from there, and like toying around with like different fonts, and like it's more than just like cut out the character and the information. I wanted to make something like really unique and really something that stand out, but like still had that attitude with it. So that's what
the,
I guess.
The Lou Nixon one's sick.
The what?
The Lou Nixon graphic.
Oh yeah. I also chose photos of like not necessarily like posed photos. Like some of them are like posed photos behind a green screen or whatever, and I was like, oh, okay, I can, you know, I can cut out the background on that. And then some of them, like some like that one with like the Lou Nixon, I actually had to like physically cut him out and like make sure the smoke is, and then I didn't get anything of the background he was in, because it was not like a blank background.
Cutting out like inside the smoke is not easy to do. It's a lot of detail.
Yes. So like, and there's no AI used or anything like that, because you know, I don't want to do that, and it's awful. And so it's all just my skill set that I'm learning for and everything. But the fact that the reference of like getting unplugged in the matrix of like the independent scene, that's why it's like really funny when I watch like television wrestling and then I watch like independents, and like it's almost like I'm referencing what are they doing on television, and how can we on the independent level match that, but for a cheaper price point in a sense.
Yeah.
And like, there are certain things that, you know, production wise and everything. Yeah. Production wise, you like, you can only do so much, but like, how can like my presentation or my sound or all these things will help that? Because at the end of the day, like, you can't afford WWE prices. If you can afford AEW or TNA prices, great. But like, it's still a hardship out here in America. So like, how can we get people to see the, and I don't like using this phrase a lot, but I get it, understand the stars of tomorrow, quote unquote, stuff like that. But it's cool because now I can appreciate wrestling more as someone who's been unplugged from quite some time. But now I can appreciate more of like the production, the, and I can study like the commentators, or I can study more about like how they presented these things. And like, that's what I'm loving now. And I'm trying not to like get sucked in to and being like, and I could be a very, I could be a grump about wrestling right now because like sometimes I'm just like, why are they pushing this? Or why is this storyline going too far? But I'm seeing it more instead of the fan side or the smark side, I'm seeing as a, well, they're losing the crowd this way. Why are they doing this?
I see, that's what I mean about wanting to get plugged back in the like, all I could see is opportunities missed. You know what I mean? And like, you know, it's easy to, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? Like backseat commentate, you know what I mean? Or, you know, backseat book or whatever it is where I'm just like sitting there and going, oh, why didn't they do this? And like, there's a million logistical reasons why certain things don't happen. But then also sometimes I'm like, there is absolutely no reason why they couldn't do something like this.
Yes.
But they have chosen to not step outside the box and just do this predictable option and things like that. And that starts to send me. And I found myself in a real slump with it. And I haven't really been watching anything at all lately. I've kind of unplugged a bit from it. I've still done the dude shows when they come up, they're finished for the year.
Right.
And then, you know, I was obviously doing the, when I was over in Melbourne or whatever, doing Deathmatch Down Under or ICW and things like that. But yeah, I've really been unplugged from everything. I have no idea what's going on in the Fed or what's going on at AEW. I tried to keep up on New Japan and it hasn't really been grabbing me for quite some time, which is a shame.
Right.
Because to rewind back to what you said, the first match that unplugged me from the Matrix was New Japan, was AJ Styles versus Shinsuke Nakamura.
Wrestle
Kingdom 10 Intercontinental Championship match. If nobody's seen that match, go and watch it.
Go or watch it.
Watch like Nakamura's promo, like the promo package is what I saw that made me go, I need to find this. Because you just see this like man draped across this couch. He's so flamboyant. He's got the title there. I have no idea what he's fucking saying, but the charisma that leaks off him is amazing. You know what I mean? Like, to see him now and to see him wrestle now is night and day.
Oh,
like he's watered down to like the point of unrecognizable.
And I, you know, and I get that too, because like, I don't want to be that
easy. Well, he couldn't do that forever.
No, like, no. Yeah. And I get, and like, same with like Okada, like a lot of people complain about Okada and AEW and I'm like, Okada was the top of the mountain for so long. Let the man have a dumb catchphrase and let him do okay matches, and then he'll turn it up for like a real serious match and everything.
They also, those people that are saying that also forget the time when they, you know, they downed, in the time that I was watching New Japan, they downcycled Okada several times. Usually he was at the top of the card, but then next minute he's dyed his hair red. He's carrying around balloons with smiley face.
I remember that.
And he's a fucking joke character. Or then they fucking felt the need to rehabilitate his finishing move. So he just went, I'm so good, I'm not going to use the Rainmaker anymore. I'm going to use this dumb money clip hold. And he didn't use the Rainmaker for like a year to 2 years. And but then you know when he dropped the Rainmaker that time when it came back, it
was big pop.
So over, and it was a kill shot again.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, he just knows what he's doing. So you don't have to worry about him. But I just think as well, the presentation is just always going to be different because AEW presents things in a different way through an American lens,
right?
Not through the Japanese. Like New Japan presents wrestling as like conflict through sport, right? Like, is what it is, you know? So it's a real martial art. It's a sports league. And then they deal with conflicts like within that. Yeah. And it's all based around, like, it's very rarely like a personal kind of thing. It's like a who is best. Like, that's always like the kind of thing. And that really like hits for me. In stuff like AEW and WWE, they're going to tell storylines, and it's the medium, right? Like, it's the difference. So he's never going to hit the same. He's definitely going to have matches where he'll get to those moments, and you'll get that, you know, Okada finishing stretch that we all love, and it will absolutely kill it. You know, that's just the way it's going to be.
That's why it never, like, I get the argument of like, why are AEW pay-per-views 5 hours long? And why are WWE pay-per-views like two, if that? And I view it as like more bang for your buck, honestly, because like, but also it's that foreign style, because like what people don't understand in like in Japan, they're doing tours, and throughout the tours, they're having like whatever the main feud is, the main people in the feud are in these multi-man matches. And like, you'll barely see the two lock up until the big main event of that tour.
There'll be stare downs, there'll be brief interactions, but then they get interrupted. They're constantly like teasing it until the point when it gets to that. And they use the factions and the multi-man sort of tag thing to do it.
Yes.
Which is why Bischoff invented the NWO, because he saw how fucking Japan did it and he went, I should do that.
Yeah.
He obviously went a different way about it, but that was his thought.
I love the idea of faction warfare. Like,
that's
the biggest thing. That's what always drew me to like a lot of the Japanese wrestling, is this faction warfare. Is these people, these factions are all feuding together, and then it's a big deal when a certain member jumps from one faction to another, or when one faction fades away and then all of a sudden a new faction with like different members, they shuffled the deck and they have redealt it out. Dragon Gate, for example, does this beautifully, because I remember when I was watching Dragon Gate, when the big feud, when I was jumping into Dragon Gate, this is like mid 2010s, like early to mid 2010s. Shima with the Blood Generation faction, like, there was a split because they were like the most dominant faction, but there was ended up being a split, and Shima ended up getting basically knocked out of that faction, and the Blood Generation faction, they shuffled a couple of the members around and everything, but then they turned into the Muscle Outlaws, and they changed the gear colors, and they changed the flag, and I just like, I love that idea. That's why, like, I love when the AEW, that like Don Callis, the last like 2 years, has slowly built up this faction,
this army, basically,
this literal army. Now they are the big bad right now. They are the main characters. While the Death Riders, who had a, you know, for a good 2 years, had a grasp and a firm grasp, and they were up front, the Don Callis family were lurking in the shadows. Now, guess what? Now they don't need to lurk in the shadows. They have enough firepower, and they have all these people now, and now they are the main big faction right now. And while the Death Riders are in, like, in a mid-card battle right now with the conglomeration and like those people, and like, that's what I personally, as a wrestling fan, love the idea of that. WWE is doing certain things differently, and I gotta be honest, like, I keep tabs of WWE. I don't actively watch WWE. There's nobody and there's nothing on the WWE platform right now that makes me go, I am going to watch this. The sound, the look, and everything looks completely different. Like, they've really, like, stepped it up. They've really embraced a lot of the stuff from the McMahon era now to the Triple H era. But having said that, it feels like wrestling NASCAR now, with, like, there's, you know, all the stuff on the ring and the ring aprons, and everything is a sponsored match, and their ad revenue, and it's this is sponsored by, this is sponsored by, this is sponsored by, this is sponsored by, and, like, it almost got to the point where they had, like, literal sponsored weapons. And I'm like, let's put capitalism as a wrestling company. Like, that's what it feels like. So I am more interested in like what TNA and MLW and NWA and AEW and like the independents and my own brand, and how can I make something that is very unique and different and put myself out there as well. And also just like my own presentation. Like, look, when I do commentary, I look like I am a substitute art teacher. I have a pair of slacks and I have a, you know, button up shirt. And I look like I just
look like another one of the fans.
Yeah. And I know like eventually I need to buy a suit. Like that's what Bullard tells me all the time. He's like, you know, what's your next move? You sound good in the mic. You look good. I'm losing weight. I've been in the, I'm in the gym 3 to 5 days a week now. And I started doing that and I've like lost a lot of weight. I've gained some of it back in muscle. Like I'm back squatting 200 pounds. I'm doing front squats now. I want to look like to the point that I could be a wrestler, but I'm not gonna.
You got to have a stare down with somebody you don't look
I don't look out of place. But I know eventually I need to get like a suit. Because Bullet are always telling me, so you need to get a suit. I'm like, I need to get suit money, and then we'll talk. Yeah, you know.
Did you have you had any opportunities since you've been in wrestling to get involved physically in any matches or anything?
I've
had a few opportunities that have been pretty fun.
The only opportunity I've been in the ring a couple of times. One time was a ring announcer. I'm testing the waters of ring announcing.
In a real ring once, and that was at the end of ICW. Like I got to stand in the chains.
Yeah.
Danny called up everybody that worked on the show, and that was very cool. But that's the first time I physically stood in a wrestling ring.
I've stood in a wrestling ring to be a ring announcer a couple of times, but then I also got to do an in-ring segment, like a Piper's Pit-esque segment.
That's right. I saw something where you were interviewing people and stuff like
that. Yes. And that was at Norfolk County Championship Wrestling. That was my very first time of stepping into the ring. And mind you, not my choice. The promoter goes, we want to kind of do like an in-ring segment. Would you be open to doing something in the ring and hosting it? And I go, I've never done that before. Let's give it a go. And let me tell you, of me working out has grown my confidence to the point where I felt comfortable now to the point that I am standing inside the ring, camera and crew are on me, fans are seeing me instead of just me at a desk or me away from the ring and they can barely see me. They're more concentrated on the people in the ring. I was heard and not seen. And now I'm learning to be seen and heard. A wild line to cross. Right. And now I get it. Like now I'm just like, now I had the taste of it a little bit and I'm just like, okay. Yeah. I'd be willing to do more of this. Do I want the ring
thing? It's really fun.
Yeah.
Like, and learning to like slow down and listen to the crowd and let them cheer for stuff and things like that is like really fun. I want to be physical in the ring? Is it kind of what you say? No, because I don't really want to be hurt.
Right.
Did I have fun, you know, dual choke slamming a man through a table or like kicking a guy in the balls or like, you know, all these things? Absolutely. I've taken ball shots when hosting a wrestling quiz as well. Like dumb things, definitely. Actually any kind of real wrestling maneuver, no way.
I'm
too old for that.
I am too old for that, but also I have a vision of just like I want to do a quick like there is a like the story is like a wrestler and whatnot keeps messing around with the commentators or the people and everything. And I want to get to a point where like the referee is knocked out and I want to go, hold on 1 second. I want to take the headphones off, race in, hit something like minor, a DDT or something that, like, if they're light enough, maybe on my shoulders and then, like, throw them off or something like that. Or, like, just, or, like, work a power slam. Something enough to run in, do a thing, snap it off, and then head back to the desk and put my stuff on. So you get, like, the pop and, like, the freak out from the fans of seeing a rando, but who someone is involved with the show, do the thing and then come back to the desk and finish it up. Am I ever going to pitch that? No. Would I be open to the idea of it? Perhaps. Will my wife give me cyanide? And because I think my wife is like at one point, and God bless her, like I said, she is so happy to see me do what I'm doing. Especially with everything that has happened with her, and everything, she was so, I'm so emotionally fulfilled from wrestling that like these opportunities and me hustling and me talking about all these places and me doing these treks with some of the wrestlers themselves in the car, and we're driving the promotions that are 3, 4, 5 hours away, you know, burn and turn, or I'm staying at somebody's couch or whatnot. Like, I am doing the roads much like the wrestlers are.
Yeah, sure.
And it's a rarity that commentators would be at that place and willing to do it. I remember Neil Diamond Cutter post a show that I was doing in Wisconsin. I'm changing in the back, and he goes, "It's very impressive that someone like you, who is a commentator, is actively doing the same things that us workers are doing, because it shows how much you care about your work and the work of all of this." And not every day that like a commentator is willing to be in the same car, help travel, help set up, do all the things, and then also do the commentating and then leaving with like talent or yourself or, you know, helping tear down rings and things like that. Like,
yeah, we always try and when we're on shows and stuff, my wife and I try and contribute and help pack up and things like that, you know, be part of the team where we can. I think that's kind of important. It's not always possible, but try our best, you know?
Yeah.
To do it. I think if you respect the medium and all the hard work that everybody's doing, and if you're a part of the team or whatever, then I think contributing makes sense, right?
Like I agree. Right. I think it's
build trust.
We're all, I've always like, and shout out to Ethan, the promoter for Divine Pro, for saying this. He gave me like some thanks online. He's just like, I was the type of person that like no task is too small.
Yeah.
And I did that throughout with Chris. You know, there have been many a times with RPW that like I'm staying afterwards 2, 3, 4 hours after a show's ended, and I'm helping clean a venue. And like, in theory, that should be like the Green Kids and other people helping with that. But I'm in the, you know, how many times that I'm going with a vacuum at the Berwyn Eagles and like going in the locker room area where there's carpet and like cleaning up some of the stuff from the wrestlers, or like mopping the floors from blood spatter.
I know that.
You know,
I know that out for ICW and DMDU, we had a huge cleanup this one time. And they were like, the venue was like, "Oh, so great to have you guys. We have like a 10-year-old's birthday party tomorrow morning." And there was no way I was letting it.
I just remember like we're all in this together. We're all trying to do our damnedest, and like we're unsung heroes. Like, and yeah, I like to go on shows and podcasts and tell my tale and tell the stories and everything. And when I say I'm involved in wrestling, they're like, people give me a side eye, and I'm like, I'm not a wrestler myself. But I'm at the point where I'm doing enough that it helps the people, and the right people are noticing what's going on and the work that's being done, and the people that care about it and care about hear it and see it, and they are appreciative more of what's going on. And that's like, that's why I like a lot of things. Like, it's kind of sad that like RPW is, you know, is closing its doors, because, you know, that was the first place for me that I got thrown into wrestling. Like, honest to God, Like, it was one of those, I've always loved wrestling. I like talking, clearly. I'm an ex-radio broadcaster. You know, let's give this a go. To the point now where this coming April will be 5 years of me calling wrestling matches. And I want to pursue commentary to the level of television. I would love to do this as near a full-time basis as I can, if not full-time as well.
Yeah, that's awesome, man. Well, I mean, you're in a position now, you're putting in the work, you're crafting your social media presence, you're putting in time on the road, you're meeting people and things like that. So, and you're in the country of wrestling. So there's no reason with, you know, with the work ethic you're putting in and stuff that you can't get there. And I think you've got the talent and the drive to make it happen.
Well, I appreciate that. I'm really, really doing this art because good commentary, like I mentioned before, is like curtains on a house. Like when they're bad, everybody will notice. When it's good, just blends everything together. And like, that's the most beautiful thing about commentary. Like we are the narrators of the story. We are not the main characters, and that is fine by me. I don't need to be a main character, but I'm more than happy to hold somebody's hand and go, take my hand, let's go on an adventure. And that's what wrestling is.
That's awesome. Well said. Well, there you go. Look at that perfect outro for our conversation.
It's like I know what I'm doing.
It's almost like he does this professionally. Guys, where do you find this man online? Is the socials under Peapod anymore?
No, I changed it. I changed it. So I know, right? It's
CJ Peapod Owen. Is that what it is?
Yeah, CJ Peapod Owen on Instagram. I have it the same on Facebook. But I have a link tree. It's CJ Owen calls the number 4, the letter U. That's usually the username for it. And it's Owen, not Owens. Everybody puts an S on it, but it's not.
Yeah.
The name came from
choosing that.
So it's really funny. So I changed the name because of two reasons. One, when I got the puzzle English gig, quick side story before we wrap it up. When I got the puzzle gig, I wanted something a little bit more professional. Nothing against Peapod. I like the name and I got my name out there as Peapod, but like, I didn't want a commentary name that sounded like I was trying to put a goofy name over, and I didn't want to take something away from the people. Like guys like Taz and Excalibur, they're ex-wrestlers that became commentators. And I'm a commentator myself. Correct. So I still use Peapod a little bit, and because I'm never not going to be Peapod. And if someone calls me Peapod on the call, I'm not going to correct them because that's been my name and I'll still answer to it. But CJ Owen came from, CJ is my initials, is my first and middle initial. And that was what my grandmother used to call me. And then my grandfather, who was my biggest influence in my life, his last name was Owen. So I had that name kind of in my back pocket since my radio days, if for whatever reason I couldn't be Peapod on the radio anymore. I decided to change it. So when the puzzle English gig came out and they made the big announcement that I was going to be starting to call CJ Owen, I started the process of getting people to know that name now. But I'll answer to both. I'm still going to be, I'll still forever be Peapod in some circles, and that is quite okay. I never not want to be that. That's been literally my nickname since college. Before college, but when I was a senior of high school, so until 2004.
In your first interview, did we touch on where Peapod came from?
Yes.
I can't remember.
Yes. And it was a weird name. A short story. It was a weird name that somebody in the senior year of high school started calling me because it was the first word that popped in my head when they met me. I was at the senior year of high school. When I got into college radio, I really liked the idea of having a college radio name, like a radio name. So I was Peapod on the radio. When I got into corporate radio and I got my first on-air gig, I asked if I could be Peapod because all my friends are already calling me that. So yeah. Then when I got into wrestling, I'm like, well, there's a built-in name right there. So
good to go.
Yeah, I'm good to go. So I am hot to go, as the kids say.
They are.
Well,
you know what isn't hot to go? The signal right now of us speaking, it's starting to break up on you. I guess it's playing you out. So
maybe.
You've turned into a robot. But I do want to thank you for your time.
Of course.
One of my best friends in wrestling. I always love talking to you every day and send about memes and different things like that. Thanks for making me actually log on and do this for the first time in a while.
Absolutely.
Thanks to anybody that listens to this. I'm sorry I haven't been as regular. There's a lot of life going on and I get very little time to myself. So occasionally I just need to sit on the couch and stare into the abyss and not have another conversation. But I've super enjoyed this. I always find it really motivating to speak to you because you're out there trying to do the damn thing and do it in a medium that I traverse in as well. So I really appreciate you, man. Thank you so much for your time.
I appreciate you, brother. Thank you so much.
No worries. People will send me all the links to all the various things he does and all his promotions and do all the work for my notes so I can share it all with you.
You got
He's only just learning this now. Fading him out. There's nothing he can just say to stop him writing the notes. And I am playing the outro music. Goodbye and good night. That's Kenny Omega's sign off, not mine. So it's all about peace, love, and pro wrestling. Pro wrestling? Pro wrestling. I don't even know how to do this anymore. Peace. Thanks for listening. Faces and Feels is a proud member of the Count Out Podcasting Network. It is created and hosted by me, Rafe Houston, edited by myself and the amazing Ryan Neitzy, and the show is available on all good podcast platforms, so please go rate and subscribe. You can follow the show everywhere on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, etc. at Faces Feels Cast, and you can check out the Count Out Network and all our sister shows over there at Count Out Pod. If you'd like to book me for commentary, have an interview request, a topic suggestion, or you just want to say hi, you can email us at facesandfeels@gmail.com. With all that said, thanks for listening, and please support our friends and sponsors. Peace.
This has been a Count Out Podcast.
Hey, have you guys heard of the new show on the Count Out Network, the Ichiban Sweetcast?
It's the brand new New Japan Pro Wrestling Podcast starring the International Wrestling Grand Prix. That's me, your good friend Curtis Spears.
And me, your bad friend Rafe Houston. And we're here to talk about everything New Japan Pro Wrestling, reacting to everything, getting worked up, getting very happy, sometimes crying. Kind of like something else we used to do, right?
Oh, yeah. That was the old Okada Shorts podcast, right?
Ah, that's right. And if you love that show, you're going to love this show because it's exactly the same show.
Yeah, we just had to change the name.
Yeah, we did. But you can check it everywhere on a social media handle that we haven't made yet.
Yeah, we're really new to this. So what you can do is search on your favorite podcast catcher of choice. Look for the Ichiban Sweetcast.
Sweetcast, Ichiban.
Hey, hockey fans. Can't get enough hockey? Then get more with Team USA. When you crave the fast-paced, hard-hitting action on the ice, but you don't always love the big league price, then Team USA has you covered with all the thrills and all the energy at USA Hockey Arena in Plymouth, and all at a family-friendly price. Get more fun and more hockey when Team USA hosts exciting NCAA, international, and USHL opponents. Grab your tickets now at usahockeyntdp.com and see America's NHL stars of tomorrow.
This isn't just a game, it's a once-in-a-generation event. The Harlem Globetrotters 100-year tour. Celebrate 100 years of high-flying dunks, 100 years of show-stopping moves, and 100 years of changing the game. Bring the whole family and be part of the legacy. This game is once in a century. Be there at Schottenstein Center on December 27th. Go to harlemglobetrotters.com for your tickets to the 100-year tour.